Realty Nation. It's your host, Abhi Golhar. Welcome to the Think Realty podcast. Now, today we're talking multifamily real estate investing. And for a lot of real estate investors out there, you have a little bit of cash, but you're like, you know, do I want to go really flip properties right now when prices are at an all-time high and I have to manage contractors and timelines and budgets and hard money lenders? And no, of course you don't want to do that. You're too pretty to do this. Right, what you need to do is take your hard-earned cash that you're making over here and you put it to work over here so that your cash over here can work as hard as you do over here. That makes sense, right? So my guest today is the CEO of Think Multifamily, and he'll be joining us in just a second. We'll be sharing some tips about what you can do a little differently with your money, but of course, make sure you seek a financial advisor. This is educational purposes only. I'm sure Mark would want me to say that. And we're going to dive into some pretty awesome strategies here and, of course, what the thinkmultifamily.com platform has to offer. Before we get into that, I need a huge give a huge shout-out to the sponsor of today's podcast, brought to you by Briefcase.email. Join thousands of readers and sign up at Briefcase.email to receive a free weekly newsletter for real estate entrepreneurs. Briefcase loves to have fun with their newsletter. If you don't laugh or cry, more so laughing, they'll give you your money back. Go to Briefcase.email to sign up. All right, let's jump right into the multifamily conversation. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. Give us a little background on who you are, what you do, and how Think Multifamily became thinkmultifamily.com.
Sure. Quick background. I'm in Dallas now. Grew up in Michigan. One of seven kids. I have an identical twin brother, and we grew up not with a lot of we had, you know, food and place to live, which is more than a lot of people, but not much extra. So my brother and I said, we're going to do things differently than the average person. And when we were seniors in college, we ended up looking at real estate. Why? It just made sense to me. We didn't have anybody in our family or anyone that was buying real estate. So we actually bought our first property when we were 22 years old. Then we both did corporate world and continued to buy small properties, like 2 to 4 units. CPA for a while, then did IT, business manager consulting and things like that, started an IT business. And again, continued to buy. And then my IT business did pretty well. It's, you know, at least I thought it was doing well at the time. Looking back at it, maybe not so, but money I was okay with, but hours I was crazy. So I was probably 90 plus hours a week, sleeping, you know, 3 hours a night consistently. And frankly, not spending any time with my wife, Tamil, and which caused some issues, as you might imagine. So we said, well, we both love real estate. Why don't we start looking at buying larger properties? That's really the only way we're going to be able to do this, because I was buying a property every couple of years, and it's going to take me, you know, 100 years to probably replace my income that I was making in IT. So we started looking at larger properties back in 2013. We purchased over 10,000 units, I guess, since then. We're in 9 states, and it's all 100% focused around multifamily business.
I like it, man. So you mentioned you grew up in Michigan. Where in Michigan? I'm a Michigander myself.
Oh, you are, actually. I grew up in Owosso, which I'm not sure if you've heard of or
not. Yeah, no, but I have no idea where that is.
my wife grew up in Warren. So my wife was in Warren, you know, close to Detroit. I grew up about 85 miles from there. So.
Okay, cool. I'm from Kalamazoo, Michigan. Look at that.
Oh, Kalamazoo. We just closed a deal in Kalamazoo, actually, a week ago.
Nice. Well, welcome to the family, I guess, or welcome home. So when it comes to multifamily, there are a lot of folks that are just like, you know, how the heck do you pick? Like, what do you do? You're new. I want to talk to the new investors first. There's this big, I guess, idea that you have to start wholesaling first. Then you have to go fix and flip. Then maybe some rentals. And then multifamily. Because multifamily just seems like somewhat untouchable because they're more zeros. Or maybe the operations are a little more complex. And you have to know more people. Or maybe you have to be or look a certain way. Help me kind of demystify some of these things. Is any of that accurate?
Yeah, so I mean, it's actually partially accurate, depending on how much you're willing to get out there and learn some sort of skill, right? So if someone says, oh, I'm going to buy a single family, I said, that's fine, right? But at least understand the differences. So we started small. I wish we never frankly did, because it was a bigger headache than it is now, you know, owning thousands of units. The biggest thing people you know, hindrance or the mindset is, how do I buy a 100-unit property? I don't have the balance sheet. I don't have the liquidity the lender needs. I don't have the broker relationships. I don't have any of these things, right? Mm-hmm. And I would just say, you don't need to have all those things. You need to have something of value. Something of value could be you're a hustler finding deals. It could be that you're really good at underwriting deals, like, you know, in Excel and things like that. But I don't care really how you slice it. If you're looking for 100-plus unit deals, you're going to have a lot easier time hooking up with somebody, whoever that is, partnering with somebody that's in that submarket, already buying, done it before, has a broker relationship. So, you know, the thing we run into is a lot of people think they have to do every single area themselves before they get started. And I would just say you're born a certain way. You have some sort of, you know, kind of God-given talent that can either already exist or can be easily developed. Work on that, become really good at it, add that value to somebody else. And the other areas of, you know, multifamily and syndication, you know, raising money and things like that can come over time. But don't wait. If you wait too long, then you're just, you know, frankly, you never get started.
What are some of the top trends that are occurring in the multifamily space in terms of where I should be looking at buying? Secondary markets, tertiary markets? Should I be honing in on a specific, say, age range of people? What are you seeing out there?
Right. I would, you know, for us, you know, even like during the height of, you know, pandemic, everyone's like, a lot of people are like, well, I'm not doing anything. We're like, well, we're actually looking nonstop. I think you should always be out there looking. We are buying more in some of the, you know, kind of tertiary markets because the pricing has gotten so high in some of the, you know, the core markets, frankly. I think, you know, looking at certain markets, you say, hey, it's landlord friendly there. You have to be careful on that a little bit because it's not across the state, as example. There are certain counties and cities and things like that that are more landlord friendly. But I do think you need to look to see how properties have performed during COVID, in particular, like with bad debt. Even during COVID, there are some areas where we could still evict, regardless of what the federal government was doing. The judges were evicting people. So that's something you might want to look at to see how has it performed. And, you know, the big thing about how it's performed without going into too much detail is to make sure that you're looking at what actually was collected on a cash basis and not an accrual basis from an accounting standpoint. It's critical that you understand that difference when you're looking at financial statements. And then some people are like, well, hey, maybe I'll look at areas where it's all government assistance and things like that. We haven't done that, but I will tell you from looking at it, how does a lender look at it? They're the largest investor in your deal typically, and they're going to look at certain things like crime. Is a crime high there? How is it performed during, you know, with the bad debt and things like that? And looking at those things, I can tell you, because we own a lot of properties, is that the areas that do have the higher crime, it just as a general statement, are tougher properties and have performed worse than some of the other properties that are, you know, not brand new, but more of a, you know, class B-ish in a market. We have some properties that basically have had no bad debt, which is unusual during the pandemic. But I do think tertiary markets you need to look at, but it needs to have a story there behind it before you start trying to raise capital. It can't be a market with 10,000 people in it and you're like just going to try to raise money for it. It's going to be very, very difficult to do that.
When it comes to, so let's say you go to a secondary market. You go to a secondary market, you found a deal that loosely fits the criteria for a lender, and they say, great. Now you need to bring $1,500,000 to the table. You look at your bank account, you've got maybe 30 G's, right?
Right.
And then, you know, here's Mark's cell phone number, right? Like, how do we make this trade happen? What do you need to do to put the equity together in a GP, LP kind of format so that you can make the deal work? Or do you just wholesale the deal to somebody else? Or how do you stay involved in it if you're doing all this work and you're really honest, you're trying to make it work, and maybe you just don't have the cash? You don't have the equity.
Right. No, it's a good question for sure. For, you know, we don't really wholesale or anything. You don't really even get involved in trying to buy things that are, you know, multifamily being wholesale. Doesn't mean it's bad, just we don't do that. I think at the end of the day, I mean, there are a lot of aspects to it. Like, you can hustle, you can do all these things, but the two main areas you're going to potentially struggle with will be around, do you have the balance sheet for the lender, which is going to be, you know, usually 100% of the loan amount for net worth, and then 10% or more of the loan amount as liquidity. And if you say, well, I can't do that, there are a lot of people out there that will, you know, partner up with you and sign on a loan as a key principal. So that can be pretty easily resolved. The bigger one would be, like you mentioned, you have 30K, need 1.5. Waiting until you have a deal already, you know, in the works, in my mind, is too late. You need to develop those relationships with investors and or partner with somebody, not that just thinks they can raise money, but they've raised it before in the past consistently, and that the deal you're looking at fits the model that their investors are interested in. I don't just try to, you know, force a deal into, you know, an investor's, you know, down the throat, if you want to say, if it doesn't meet their criteria. But, you know, raising money can be tricky because a lot of people are nervous, scared about doing it. They think they can raise money and they can't, and other people think they can't raise money and they can. But I do think if you're going to be raising, you know, $1.5 million in your example, the average person will struggle very, very much trying to bring $1.5 million to their first deal, especially if they have no track record. So partner with somebody who has a track record, and definitely partner up with somebody who either has the capital themselves or they have the ability to raise capital and your deal fits their model for their investors. So there are many people out there. There's more capital out there than people, you know, than deals, frankly, there really are. But I don't use the term it's so easy to raise money like people do. We've raised, you know, millions and millions of dollars, but it also, you know, it's work. Right. And you don't know how investors are always going to react to a deal. So the deal, as much as possible, should be pretty similar to deals you've done in the past for your, you know, for the first deal you're going to try to raise capital on.
So the thinkmultifamily.com platform, help me understand that a little bit. So you've got training, you've got tools, you've got calculators, you've got all the resources so that me as somebody that wants to learn more about multifamily, it's a very stepped out approach to kind of getting that done. Is there a guide in there that helps me understand, hey, here's how to go raise money, right? Like, you've got a deal, I need equity, I need the $1.5 million, here's how to go do it.
There is. So, you know, you can listen to podcasts, read books, and go through our training or everyone else's training, frankly. And end of the day, you're still not going to probably be prepared for a deal. You're going to learn the most by doing it. But yes, as far as all the different steps, you know, we have 14 steps. We didn't obviously invent multifamily investing, but we have 14 steps to it. One is including, you know, raising capital. But that's just head knowledge, right? You have to be able to take that head knowledge and now actually take action for one, and then actually make it happen. And that's the hardest part people struggle with. So for us, you know, we have a group. It's called Family Syndication Group. It's built like around a family environment where people will help you, if you're new, come into a deal and try to fill those gaps, maybe where you're weak. And then, you know, whether it's capital for a loan or raising money and things like that, people kind of come together and will help you get that done. I also will partner with people on deals if the deal makes sense and they want to partner with me as far as raising capital and signing the loan and those aspects as well.
So it looks like the platform is pretty all-encompassing. I think that's really cool. What are some initial steps? What do I do? Do I go to thinkmultifamily.com? Do I email somebody on your team? How do I get started?
Yes, you can go to thinkmultifamily.com. There's a form out there. You can email me directly if you want. It's Mark, M-A-R-K, at thinkmultifamily.com. We're not trying to push people into one thing. One of the main things we're trying to do is educate people to understand, you know, the differences between some of those small properties you mentioned versus larger properties, why you might do one versus the other. Our whole goal is to educate people to either be passive investors or partner with them to be active investors like we are, and, you know, share our experiences, share our track record, our broker contacts. We have a built-in team and things like that. But the whole idea is just, it's a conversation. Again, we're not salespeople. We don't push people into things, but we will try to help, you know, educate you as far as different aspects of it. In some cases, it doesn't make sense, but at least get, you know, knowledgeable first on any, you know, anything you're going to invest in, and then make a decision whether you want to move forward or not. We'll try to help you with that.
Yeah, you bring a really good point about head knowledge, right? This idea that you can stuff it all up in your brain, but if you right. never take action on it, then it's just, how can it work? There's no way that it can work. It's like a rocking chair. I think Tony Robbins says this a lot, yes. right? Like worrying is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but doesn't get you anywhere. It's the exact same thing with head knowledge. It gives you something to do. You can read all the books. You can listen to Mark and I going back and forth on a podcast until you're blue in the face. But until you actually pick up the phone and call a broker or call somebody or do something, you're not going to build any kind of generational wealth for you and your family. And that's where thinkmultifamily.com can really come in and help expedite that learning curve, because there is a learning curve here, not only from the knowledge perspective, but then also from the resource perspective and then the action steps to move forward. And I think that's what I appreciate most about your platform, man. So congratulations on all the success in your platform and everything that you're doing and will continue to do. I do have an idea for you, but I'll probably get in touch with you offline about that. Maybe we can.
I like ideas. I'm always willing to listen, and we will adjust when it makes sense, for sure, without a doubt. We're very open to suggestions.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, Mark, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. The best website, I'm assuming, is thinkmultifamily.com, right?
That's correct. I appreciate your time today.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Thanks. Realty Nation, the next segment is brought to you by Think Multifamily. Now, whether you're a passive investor looking for passive income or an aspiring syndicator ready to learn how to grow big and fast, Think Multifamily is the industry's leading acquisition and education company. They're here to help you invest for your family's future every step of the way. Visit www.thinkmultifamily.com. So in this segment, we're talking about increasing small business profits. You know, you might not know it yet, but you are a small business owner. You buy and sell real estate. You might buy and hold real estate. But frankly, you are in the business of real estate. And like many business owners, you start out thinking that you're going to be able to stop doing it one day, or at least see the fruits of your labor one day, until you realize you wake up 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, or in some cases, 5 years from now, and think, crap. You know, I built a job for myself and not a business for myself. Well, there are a couple foundational things that you need to make sure that you do to build a business, and especially building that small business profit. In a recent article that was written by our very own editorial staff at thinkrealty.com, we covered a couple of these topics, the first of which is overhead costs and business supplies. You can't do business without supplies, and you need to make sure your overhead costs are in check. It's a very natural tendency to start taking on overhead. People, technologies, etc. You don't need that just yet. What you need to do is prove to the marketplace that you have a good market fit for your customers, and you actually know who your customers are. Number two, you want to cut operational costs. For many of you that are running businesses, you might have some unnecessary operational costs. By cutting them, guess what happens to your profit margin? Multiple choice. A, will it decrease? B, will it increase? If you don't know the answer to that, you and me got a problem. Three, outsourcing. Outsourcing is a really good way to also optimize efficiencies and also optimize any business costs that may be costing you a little too much here stateside. I'll give an example of that. A really easy example of that is coders. If you hire somebody here, it's going to cost you anywhere between a good coder, a good developer, anywhere between $80,000 a year and $150,000 a year. But if you go overseas, you sacrifice a little bit, probably not a whole lot on quality, but you get that same developer for a fraction of that cost. So outsourcing is a good thing, depending on where you are in the overall life cycle. The overall life cycle of your business. There are a couple of additional things here, but there are two more that I want to touch on. Number one is excellent customer service. If you don't have excellent customer service and you don't treat your customers like kings and queens, they're not going to be there for you when you roll out new products or if you're asking for them to buy. You know what happens? Your revenue starts to go down. Number two, employee retention. Treat your employees right. It's that simple. If you don't, you'll see a lot of turnover, and you'll spend more time training your employees than growing your business. And that's not where I want to see you. Think Realty Nation, that's a wrap. If you have any questions, you want to get in touch, head on over to thinkrealty.com. Make sure to register for the Baltimore conference that's coming up September 18th and 19th. in Baltimore, Maryland. You can do that by going to thinkrealty.com/Baltimore. And it's a time where you can meet and greet with some awesome real estate investing pros. Baltimore is actually one of my favorite conferences to go to. There's so many spectacular people that show up, and I always have meetings before, during, and after the event, not only to catch up with these people, but also to dig into their heads and see some of these next level investing strategies. So we've done something for you. We have a discount code. If you go to thinkrealty.com/Baltimore and you register for two tickets, you have to register for two tickets and you type in the code podcast, you'll only be charged for one ticket. So guess what? It's a BOGO deal. It's a buy one, get one. So go ahead and do that. Go to thinkrealty.com/Baltimore, excuse me. Type in the code podcast and there you go. It hooked you up. Pretty sweet deal. And I think that's the show. You got any questions, get in touch. You know where to go. You know the website. You know where to find me online. I'm pretty much on LinkedIn these days. And until next time, happy investing.